Welcome to Codependents Anonymous. We welcome you to Codependents Anonymous, a program of recovery from codependence, where each of us may share our experience, strength, and hope in our efforts to find freedom where there has been bondage, and peace where there has been turmoil in our relationships with others and ourselves. Most of us have been searching for ways to overcome the dilemmas of our conflicts in our relationships and our childhoods. Many of us were raised in families where addictions existed. Some of us were not. In either case, we have found in each of our lives that codependence is a most deeply rooted compulsive behavior, and that it is born out of our sometimes moderately, sometimes extremely dysfunctional family systems. We have each experienced in our own ways the painful trauma of the emptiness of our childhood and relationships throughout our lives. We attempted to use others, our mates, friends, and even our children as our sole source of identity, value, and well-being, and as a way of trying to restore within us the emotional losses from our childhoods. Our histories may include other powerful addictions, which at times we have used to cope with our codependence. We have all learned to survive life, but in CODA, we are learning to live life. Through applying the 12 steps and principles found in CODA to our daily life and relationships, both present and past, we can experience a new freedom from our self-defeating lifestyles. It is an individual growth process. Each of us is growing at our own pace, and will continue to do so as we remain open to God's will for us on a daily basis. Our sharing is our way of identification and helps us to free the emotional bonds of our past and the compulsive control of our present. No matter how traumatic your past or despairing your present may seem, there is hope for a new day in the program of Codependents Anonymous. No longer do you need to rely on others as a power greater than yourself. May you instead find here a new strength within to be that which God intended.
Precious and free.
Thank you, Linda. I've asked Tammy to read the 12 steps.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tammy.
Hi, Tammy.
The 12 steps of Codependents Anonymous. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over others, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sin. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood God. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our lives. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked God to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood God, praying only for the knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other codependents and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
And I've asked Tess to read the 12 traditions.
Hi, I'm Tess, and I'm codependent.
Hi, Tess.
The 12 traditions of Codependents Anonymous. Number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon CODA unity. Number two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, the loving higher power as expressed to our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants they do not govern. Number three, the only requirement for membership in CODA is a desire for healthy and loving relationships. Number four, each group should remain autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or CODA as a whole. Number five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to other codependents who still suffer. Number six, a CODA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend a CODA name, to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary spiritual aim. Number 7, a CODA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Number 8, Codependents Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Number 9, CODA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. Number 10, CODA has no opinion on outside issues, hence the CODA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. Number 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. Number 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you, Seth.
Thank you.
This is
for
the patient
who
consists of a panel of speakers, and I'd like to turn the podium over to Tammy B. to introduce it.
I'm Tammy, codependent.
Hi, Tammy.
Codependence Anonymous is one of the many 12-step recovery programs, but we're realizing that codependent thought patterns and behaviors are quite possibly the root of all addictive behaviors. They're often the result of us believing they were not good enough, just as we are. We often find ourselves trying to control others, manipulate outcomes, and putting other people's needs ahead of our own as a way of fitting in or feeling loved. We come to CODA in pain, realizing our inability to have or maintain healthy, nurturing, and loving relationships. We may even begin to realize that the cause can lay in our own long-standing destructive, self-destructive, or self-sabotaging patterns of living. This is a step in the right direction, beginning with honest, healthy, and mentored, through the program, self-diagnosis, not self-deprecation or self-degradation. Since Codependence Anonymous itself does not offer a definite definition of codependence, we first come in contact with the patterns and characteristics of codependence as a diagnostic tool and, I believe, a roadmap out of a dark country. The behaviors tend to fall into 5 categories: denial patterns, control patterns, compliance, low self-esteem, and avoidance patterns. An example of denial patterns is, I don't know how I'm feeling. I minimize. It's not that bad. Others have it much worse. I may lack empathy for the feelings of others, not having an awareness of my own feelings. I may be attracted to those who are emotionally or otherwise unavailable, and I may be a little or a lot passive-aggressive, not knowing how to appropriately express my true feelings. Control patterns. If I can control everything and everyone, I or we will be safe. I do for others what they could and should be doing for themselves. I want something, maybe recovery, for someone else more than they want it for themselves. I manipulate, give advice, blame, and shame others. Compliance patterns. I'll do anything, be anything, to be liked / included. People-pleasing, being a chameleon. I'm too loyal, remaining in harmful situations too long. I take on the feelings of others that I'm with. I put aside my own needs for that of the other person every time. Low self-esteem. I judge my thoughts and actions harshly. I sounded so stupid. Why didn't I just, you know the drill? I'm never good enough, smart enough, pretty enough, skinny enough, rich enough. I'm not worthy of receiving good things or taking care of myself. Superiority / inferiority complexes. I have trouble setting healthy boundaries. What are those? For myself and others, they won't like me if I do that. Avoidance patterns. It's just too painful. I'm going to avoid all relationships and any intimacy. I push others away if they get too close and even act in ways that invite others to reject me and in the end end up just isolating myself. Anything sound familiar? This might just be the place for you. We'll have a panel of 5 speakers who are each going to share their experience, strength, and hope in dealing with one of these characteristics. Joyce will speak on avoidance, Carl on denial, Sarah on control, Bill on low self-esteem, and Kirsten will speak on compliance. Afterwards, there'll be a time of questions from the audience, and depending on time, there'll be a short break between the speakers. Thank you.
I came to CODA going through a divorce, a separation at the time, going through separation and going through a lot of denial. I actually came to CODA because I wanted to fix my family. That's why I came to CODA. And discovered that I needed to fix myself. And so for me, I went through divorce in my childhood, and I didn't ever want my kids to have that pain. So I, and for me it was a painful experience, and so I did everything I could to prevent that, and ended up not being able to prevent it. Not being able to prevent separation, not being able to prevent things that had happened in my childhood, like a divorce, from happening in my current situation. And so that's where I was when I came into CODA. When I first heard all the traits, I actually listened to them in CODA so that I could fix my mom, because she had one in denial, and fix, you know, she had this one and that one and this one and that one, and my stepmother and my father and everyone else. So I actually listened to all these traits, and instead of applying them to myself, I was sitting in the group applying them to other people, because I came to CODA codependent. So after attending meetings for a while, I started to apply these to myself. And so, which was a gift. It was a huge gift. Because one of the things that happens when you're in one of these patterns, you automatically behave in a pattern, and you're not actually responding to the actual situation that's occurring. You're kind of instinctually in one of these patterns. And what happened was, through the serenity prayer, having the power to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference, that beautiful prayer of separating things out and helping things become clear, I left from being powerless to becoming empowered. So I am powerless over the compulsion sometimes for this to be a knee-jerk reaction to behave in avoidance patterns, but I'm empowered through the principles in CODA, through a lot of the prayers and other techniques that I've learned in a meeting on how to become empowered. So that's been my experience, and so I thought I'd share that with you. Avoidance patterns. I'm going to read. We read this at our meeting when you come to a meeting, and I'm going to read these to you. And they have codependence often and in recovery. And at our meeting, these are in the newcomers packets in the back if you want one. Okay, and I'm going to read some of these to you, and we'll go through them. So, it says, codependence often, acting ways that invite others to reject, shame, or express anger towards them. In recovery, I act in ways that encourage healthy and loving responses from others. Codependents often judge harshly what others think, say, or do. In recovery, I keep an open mind and accept others as they are. Codependents often avoid emotional, physical, or sexual intimacy as a way to maintain distance. In recovery, I engage in emotional, physical, or sexual intimacy when it is healthy and appropriate for me. So then, what I do is when I find an avoidance pattern, right, I'll write it down, okay? So here I wrote,
thank you, Tess.
Here I wrote, ignore my father when he calls. So I'll actually write down an avoidance pattern. I'm avoiding talking to that man, all right? In recovery, I call him back in a private setting after I have said the serenity prayer within 24 hours after his call to me. Because I'll also promise to call him back, but then, and so what I do is I actually write it down on a little calendar, and I set aside this time. I say the serenity prayer before I talk to my dad, and I actually do this. Then over here in codependence often, I treat myself with low self-care to avoid my feelings. Right? So this is codependence often. And you'll find these two If you go through this, you're going to find them up in here. You'll go, oh, there they are. So I write down a specific for me, okay? And then I fill out a time chart. I have a time chart I fill out with self-care for the week, and I follow it. So I figure out when I want to take a shower, when I want to brush my teeth, when I want to have recovery time, when I want to have time to write poetry, when I want to have time to do those things, and I fill it out. And so listening to these avoidance patterns helps me see when I'm in one, and then also helps me address it. So then after I do this, I go to the fourth step. I usually work anything that I find. And I also take these, and I turn these into affirmations, and I write them down on an affirmation card. So let's take withhold expressions of appreciation, okay? In recovery, I freely engage in expressions of appreciation towards others. So if I was struggling with this one, I would actually write that down on a card, put it up on my mirror, put it in the bathroom, put it on the nightstand table where when you turn your head, put it in the vitamin, on the inside of the vitamin cabinet when you open up the, take your morning vitamins. So for a while I had many, and I'll move those through. And so I use these as affirmations on this side as tools, the in recovery. That's a part of what I do with avoidance. And what I found is that as I worked the 12 steps, and I did them all the way through once in the green workbook where they were solid, and now I can work a step here and there to deal with issues rather than... For me, I found that it was a part of my avoidance that I didn't want to do the 12 steps, that I could just float around and be free. And I was so free that it was actually an avoidance pattern. I was avoiding actually making the 12 steps concrete and actually accomplishing them once. And then after I did them once, now I know how to work different ones. And I actually have, for the most part, I have a few, you know, obviously things that I need to deal with, but... I've actually recovered to the point where I could say that the promises are actually happening. And so that's amazing. And I don't know if most of you guys are here or familiar with the promises, but how they, like with avoidance, number two, the second promise is, I am no longer controlled by my fears, but I overcome my fears and act with courage, integrity, and dignity. So for me, this was a promise that when I write down the avoidance patterns, I work them through the fourth step all the way through to the ninth step process, this actually starts to happen and has, which is very exciting for me because there was a time when I couldn't go anywhere on time. That was really difficult. I was struggling to go places on time. I was struggling to get things done, you know, which you'll hear probably in some of these others. So I brought an example of how I, like, fill this out. This is an old one, and I typed it up for... And the person is my daughter, and this is from the fourth step in the green workbook, which I would recommend as a tool to work any of the patterns, and I worked it for avoidance patterns. So this is my example. My codependent behaviors and reactions, this says, and I said, I invited my teen daughter to reject shame and express anger towards me when I discovered she had poor grades. I asked her what I did wrong as a mother, and that I blamed her, and then she blamed me for her poor grades. I reacted by crying and saying nothing else. This actually happened, you know, years and years ago. She's gone through college and all of that now, but this was happening. You know, what did I do to be such a bad mother? I actually invited her. And then, you know, what my teenage daughter did, she let me know all the things I had done to be a bad mother and why I was to blame for her grades. It was really good. And then I responded by crying. So... Over here, I put my feelings that drove those behaviors, fear that I am not a good mother. Also wanted to guilt her with my question by trying to control her choices. I cried because I honestly felt hopeless. I said nothing because I did not want to fight with her. I don't know if anybody here has ever dealt with a difficult teenager, but I have. And so this was very helpful in sorting all that out. So here's consequences to the person and myself and the relationship. I became a poor quality mom trying to manipulate her. This also became a health pattern, a mental health pattern that she might follow. She has learned to blame others by my codependence avoidance trait, and this might make her life harder. Then here, my feelings and behaviors and consequences. I feel shame that a scholarship level kid under my care has bad grades. This will affect what college she can go to. Anyway, and so as I work the fourth step with an issue, I work it all the way through, then, and I get all the way through to the other end, there's change. There's actual proactive things I do that move me out of avoidance through the program. It's attending meetings. It's being honest about what I write down in the fourth step. I guess I'm going to put that out there that I felt a little insecure about writing this down, because the part you guys don't know is she was intercepting mail, my phone, and the phone message. So of course, you know, I look like I'm just like, you know, but actually it was a really difficult situation. She actually knew how to erase my emails, you guys. So I'm like, okay, because I'm usually pretty on top of it. But I wasn't in this situation, and I handled it like a codependent. And what I'm grateful for is that because I wanted to use like guilt or manipulation to control my kids, I didn't know better. Now that I know better, I do better. I wouldn't have relationships with them to this day if it hadn't been that I actually worked the Green Workbook. I actually went through the 12 steps. I actually am able to get honest about my behaviors. And so I find that that empowerment has been life-changing for me. And I just really want to thank you guys for letting me share this with you. And I hope that something I shared helps.
So, about 10 years ago in August, I came to the Granddaddy program of AA, and I found a real connection, and I learned to go to a meeting every day, which I would do. And I did that for about 5 years. And one day I was out for a bike ride, and I went off of the Rito bike path and crashed. And I broke my pelvis severely. And when I came back to my meeting, one of my good friends said to me, you know, after I had had about 5 years in this program, my sponsor told me that it would be a good idea if I did something about my codependence. So I listened to the people that I respected and decided she was telling me that I needed to do something, and she spotted codependence in me. So I she went through a treatment program. So I looked for a treatment program and I couldn't find one, but I found CODA. And I started by going to all six meetings, one each night, and realized that I was a good candidate for it. And at the same time, part of my story that I forget about is one of the people I respected, I asked if they knew of a counselor that was 12-step related and knew a lot about codependence. So they recommended somebody, and I started going to that person, and I went to see him about once, I think it was once a week for about a year, and then I started going monthly. Going back to my childhood, my mother was the queen of codependence. My mother was the oldest of the children, and she took care of her four or five brothers and sisters because her mother was not capable of. And so my mother did everything for me, including, and I find this humorous now, including helping me. We didn't see it this way, but now I look back and see it this way. It's helping me cheat my way through high school. My parents put me in a private school, and we had to do an English paper each week. And so I would scratch it out. I'd give it to my mother. I'd go to bed. It'd be all typed up and corrected by the morning. That's how much my mother did for me. And I didn't realize it until I got into this program. I found a girlfriend to transfer that to and went with her, and then we got married and lived together for 50 years, 52 years, and she died 2 years ago. But codependence was well and good in me, and I fit most of the patterns, so today I go to two CODA meetings a week, and I am constantly doing inventory work on myself. So I was asked to talk about denial, and I was at a meeting and somebody said we need speakers to talk at this thing, and so I raised my hand immediately because it's not something that I am crazy about doing, but I do it and I get a lot out of it, because it causes me to do more inventory work. So, my topic is denial, and I didn't ask for it. I just said, give me whatever. And I figure I have a higher power, and that higher power looks out for me by taking things away that I think I need and giving me things that I don't think I need. So I spent a lot of time thinking about it. I want to write things down, and I don't. Oh, before I forget, when I came to CODA, one of the first things I did was I realized that this program was about recovery for myself. And the thing I loved about what I heard in the CODA stuff that we go through, the first thing I heard was the promises. And the promises are all about how I was going to learn to be loving and love myself and have respect for myself. Because when I came here, my self-esteem was about as low as anybody's self-esteem could be. So one of the first things I did, I had this picture, who I thought was my son. My mother brought it back from my mother when my son was born. And so I took this picture, and this is me. And I was a happy little kid. And I want to know where the hell he went. And I put him on my phone. So every time I answer my phone or turn my phone on, this little guy's there. And I have to admit, I'm getting used to talking to him. And I'm not sure he's talking back yet, but it's been really good for me. So I'm supposed to talk about denial. And there's an acronym for denial. Don't even know you're lying. I think that's it.
I am lying,
yeah. And so what this has done for me, preparing for this talk, I tend to look at things as being outside of myself. That people are causing me to be the way I am, to feel the way I am. And 5 years into the program, I'm starting to realize it's about what I'm doing to myself. So denial, to me, where I am right now, if I give this talk 5 more years from now, it'll be totally different. Probably tomorrow it'll be different, but denial's about me lying to myself and pretending things are different than what they really are. And it's an eye-opener for me. The big one here is that it's not stated as I knew it. But it says here, label others with their negative traits. I'm a good finger pointer. And I always heard that if I'm pointing my finger at somebody and saying they're doing this or they've got this, I've got 3 fingers pointing back at me. In other words, I am really good at spotting in others what I have in myself, but I'm good at denying that I have that. Like one of the biggest issues with addiction is a big ego. It's probably the biggest thing that keeps people in their addictions. So I'm really good at spotting people with big egos. And guess what, folks? I think I hide it well, mask it well, but I'm realizing, no. And it's one of the things that I know in my recovery that if I'm going to get better, I need to find ways to deflate. It'd be nice if I thought, and I'm told, can't get rid of it, going to be with me. It was with me before I was born, and it's going to be with me yet until after I die. So it's something that I need to let go of or try to lessen as much as I can. You know, there's a number of things in here, and I could probably spend an hour going through them. But I think you'd probably be bored by the end of it. And so where'd this go? So, can you summarize your journey so far? Have you had any breakthroughs? And I had a breakthrough this morning, so let me try to tell you about it. As I was getting ready to go to my early meeting, I heard this little voice say to me, "The biggest denial is the biggest denial that you have is the lie that you keep telling yourself that I am not worthy." That's the thing I'm realizing, that I'm assuming this little 4-year-old was with his mom and going, "Mom, Mom, I want a piece of candy." And my mom said something to the effect, "You're not worthy." And I heard that as not that I wasn't, she was responding from my behavior, not my person. And I heard just blank, big flashing lights, "You're not worthy." And that's the way I've lived my life. You know, when I was in college, I was the chairman of this really neat thing that we did for all the high schools throughout the state, and I never gave myself credit for the job that I did. I was always self-deprecating. So to realize that I am worthy is a life changer, if I can just remember it. The other thing, and I think it was read in the first part, that I'm coming to understand that I am full of self-limiting beliefs. And these go back to when I was 1, 2, 3. And I just downloaded these programs, this stuff people said about me, and it was misjudged. I misjudged it. But they're in there, they're in my subconscious. So I can tell my conscious mind that I'm a good person, that I'm capable. But these programs are still playing in my subconscious. And through my recovery, I'm learning that I'm learning how to go in and be conscious more of the time, and also find ways that I can rewrite those programs, because there is hope. There is our ways to do that. I can't do it yet, but I have a lot of hope for what this program has been doing for me. And I believe if I just keep coming back twice a week, Codependence Anonymous, and do my other programs, that you all are going to give me the guidance. I believe I have a higher power that I'm getting closer and closer to, and that higher power guides me in all sorts of ways. You folks are one of them. So I'm grateful to be here and grateful to have a chance to face and talk to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
I'm Sarah, codependent.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Sarah.
There wasn't one single event that got me to CODA, except for GOD, Gift of Desperation. And I always say I came to CODA because I was 37 years old and still doing everything I assumed my parents wanted me to do, and everybody else too. As I wrote this, I realized that's not entirely true. I had just started in my 30s. To do things I wanted to do, which was hard to figure out what it was because I wasn't used to figuring those things out. But when I did them, I felt selfish. I felt guilty for indulging in pleasures just for myself. So that wasn't much fun. I'm a workaholic and need to be productive all the time. I mentioned I assumed what my parents wanted me to do, and I'm thinking maybe there were times when I was assuming things that they didn't even care if I did or didn't do. So here I was, you know, being this perfect kid, thinking I, you know, was doing everything right, but I didn't really check with them. And I think that what they told me, I just blew up to a huge proportion and put all that pressure on me. So my relationships were all beautiful when I got to CODA. So I thought. I didn't make waves. I went along with what everybody wanted. I lavished gifts and favors, giving too generously of my time and money, and I didn't have much left over for myself. So the only problem was I was miserable. Sure, I was loved by others, but I didn't love or care for myself. I wanted to save the world and couldn't handle seeing others in pain, which is just the reality of life. I also took on everybody's feelings, adding to my depression. I put the world on my shoulders. I'll just mention that at the time I used other powerful addictions, like it talks about in the welcome, to cope with my codependency. It was actually my sponsor in another program that suggested that I go to CODA, and I'm ever so grateful. So a little about what the program means to me. The steps, which are used for other addictions and problems, are all about relationships, in my opinion. And I work them in other programs, and it just brings me back to relationships, which is what CODA is about. So it's about relationships with myself, my higher power, and others, not just others. And I started with myself on purpose. Actually, when I'm typing, you know, that autocorrect, and I put myself, others, it always wants to change it to others and then myself. And I'm like, no, that's not what I'm learning here. So step one for me was enlightening. I thought I had the power to make others, especially my parents, happy. I thought it was my duty. I had to save the world. I think I said that already. I might say it again. Giving up that idea has been a huge relief. I didn't know how to manage my own life, just everyone else's, I thought. I have to say I struggled with the higher power part of the program. I couldn't understand it and was miserable. But I had an open mind some of the time, and faith just trickled in. I feel calm when I turn it over is one of the CODA affirmations. And for me, that's really true. Going on with the steps, doing my inventories helps me to discover who I am as well as what I've done, which I found out are two different things, separating who I am from what I do. Next, I give the things that aren't working for me away to my sponsor and higher power. With my sponsor's guidance, I make amends to those I have harmed, including myself. My prayer and meditation has been spotty over the years, but I keep coming back to it. I've been doing it consistently for a few years now. I have had a spiritual awakening as a result of working the steps and try to practice the principles in all I do. I've done the steps oodles of times. I'm currently on step 9 on a particular topic. It's really helping me to get beyond the feelings, just feeling bad about what I didn't do. And that's what the steps do a lot for me, is move me out of feeling so bad and guilty into, oh, I can do something about this and my higher power can help. Hey, that's a win. So I want to put in a plug for CODA literature. I realize it takes time away from sharing in meetings, but starting at my first meeting, I related to the reading so much that I felt at home. Reading the preamble, welcome, steps and traditions, as well as the patterns and promises each week, reminds me of my past, shows me the progress I've made, and how I will be in the future if I work my program. They are so ingrained in me now, I can see myself when I start to do them, and I can stop. Sponsorship is also one of my keys to success. In the beginning of my recovery, there weren't any sponsors where I was living, so I had a co-sponsor, and I worked the steps in step study groups. Now I have a sponsor who I met at an international CODA conference, and she's great. She has a lot of experience, strength, and hope, and she guides me through and back to the steps. I can see my progress in many of the patterns. I chose to talk about control. Why did I do that? Because I have more recently been aware of how I am controlling. More was revealed when I was ready for it. And I don't relate to a lot of the avoidance patterns yet, but I just can't wait. More was revealed when I was ready for it. I've been focusing on that, and while I still see myself trying to control things, I also see progress. So I never thought I would speak about control, because I thought I was more of a doormat, doing everything for everybody. That's a joke. That doing everything for everyone is not controlling. That's the control pattern number one. Believe people are incapable of taking care of themselves. I grew up thinking I was supposed to take care of everyone. In CODA, I learned that that's rude and disrespectful if the other person is capable of doing things for themselves. I can help if I am asked. It was shocking to me at first to hear that other adults are capable of managing their own lives. Then what is my purpose in life? Surely I didn't think it was about living my own life, having some fun, and relationships with people I considered equals, which now I believe is everyone. My favorite promises, I learned that it is possible to become more loving, intimate, and supportive. And that sounds like, supportive to me sounds like I go in and, you know, here, there, and I'll do this for you, and I'll, you know, fix you and all like that. But I've learned that being supportive is just being there. I don't have to be any eloquent speaker to, you know, solve anybody's problems and just be loving. So that's more how I try to treat people. It's more about how I treat people than what I do for them. I have a big problem with that, who I am, not what I do. So back to control patterns, less often I attempt to convince others what to think, do, or feel, and freely offer advice and direction without being asked. Who am I to try to control another's life? Look where trying to control my life got me. Not that I'm complaining about being in CODA. I love it. But before CODA, I did things in a sneaky way, trying to get people to do what I thought was best for them. Again, very disrespectful and vain. I wouldn't be me if I didn't look up any words in the dictionary. It's a way I have of understanding on a deeper level what I am talking about. Vain means conceited, arrogant, and stuck up. I don't want to be like that. And I think it's interesting that the word vain is used in a different way means unsuccessful. So being controlling isn't usually successful now that I think about it. I was unsuccessful in saving the world, and that's okay. It's not my job. I'm probably not alone in wanting things the way I want them. I have to let go almost entirely of the way meetings are set up and the way meeting materials go back into the box or the file cabinet. I'm over it, folks. It makes me laugh that that matters to me at all. Now I like the variety of how things are done, and I'm ever so grateful that others do it. Sometimes people ask me how things should be done, and I'm learning to say, however you want to do it. There was a time when I would get to meetings early all the time and set up and lead, and someone once said, I didn't know I could do that. I thought only you could. And that really hit me. I'm like, trying to back off. So now I'm content and happy to see others take care of themselves. I want to reiterate the thought that helps me with this. It's disrespectful for me to do things for others that they can do for themselves. About having to feel needed to have a relationship with others, I usually develop relationships now based on equality, intimacy, and balance. I was depressed from ages 8 to 45. I usually sought out people who were depressed so I could help them and feel superior to them. Now I listen to people because I care. I don't need to solve everyone's problems. I can just be there. And I'm just there, and I'm just me, and that's cool. Cool enough. So that's all I've got. Thanks.
Thank you. We were in a small town. We had grandparents that were all dysfunctional and borderline and everything. So whenever any of us would express a feeling, it would just get hit down like that whack-a-mole every time on the whack-a-mole. You guys know what that is. So I never learned to feel from that point. And I'm familiar, it's a family thing, with the autocratic, alcoholic, controlling father that I fell in love with my wife. Perfect woman that treated me exactly the same way. filled that same need that I had. I just stepped right out. I didn't off the boat. Didn't even miss a step with that one. After working and reworking the steps, the 12 steps of recovery, and they're the same, they're steps right there that I worked on. The dangerous means that I used to act out to try to fill the holes from the trauma of our childhood, like it says in the beginning. And it moved from my primary addiction, and I thought, well, that's all there is. And that did not bring me happiness. And I was dedicated to that program, and it went well, and stumbled into CODA by a good friend who I respected his answers. I listened to his responses. And you go, where are you getting that information? From this book. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you gotta go to a meeting where they discuss stuff like this. So I did, and I found CODA up in Seattle at the time, and it was extremely helpful for me to understand what's below and deeper than the work that I was currently doing, currently being exposed to. In CODA, and in reading the control patterns that they are so great, I'm grateful that they've laid this out, because when I started reading these, I just saw how what was making me feel uncomfortable all my life, why I felt out of place in social situations. I can do something about that. Or I felt uncomfortable in relationships. I was always odd in those things, and it was always, you know, misjudging social signals and everything. I'm from there all the way down. And so the let's go on to my low self-esteem. Because I was never given a chance to express feelings or really recognize as an individual at all. If I weren't exactly like my older brother, then I was whipped, and physically, and shamed by my mother. And so I wasn't able to recognize my feelings. And so low self-esteem, first pattern there says have difficulty making decisions. So I never had difficulty making decisions all my childhood, 20 years married. I always had somebody there to take that responsibility for me. And I was not taking responsibility for my own decisions. And I didn't want to in my life, but wasn't aware of these other areas that I could, that I was allowed to make some good choices. My low esteem does not allow me. I always felt funny. I sought recognition and praise to overcome feeling less than. I did that in my profession as an electrical engineer, and was very good. Received compliments. Rose in the company earlier than people my age. However, I was embarrassed to receive recognition or praise for any of those efforts, for anything that I did. And it was because of the shame I felt inside of who I was. I did not have that felt self-worth. And working the steps with CODA, the CODA steps and the CODA program, I've been able to regain much, much self-esteem and being able to continue to add to it. This trait of not being able to perceive themselves as lovable or worthwhile persons, I gave away my only chance, my family's only chance to an award, a Seneca Award from New Mexico to the U.S. Air Force Academy. I gave that to my cousin because I didn't feel I was worthy of it. But I was also told to by my mother, so, you know, I was real codependent. And so then, okay, But that's not what can have on my life right now. So right now, my low self-esteem and my lack of boundaries is pulling needy people in to me that would like me because I can supply them material gains. And I receive that as, well, that's better than not liking. It's not quite the love I'm looking for, but that'll do. And it's just, it's like a meal. When you get hungry, you just want more of that. And that's setting my boundaries. It's enmeshing my boundaries where theirs end and where mine begin. CODA has given me a real clear picture on where that happens. In every situation until the one coming up. And that's going to be when I quit focusing on CODA and start looking for a woman. I know if I get into it, when we get into a relationship where we've got skin in the game or something like that, it changes the dynamic. And so I've got to stick close. I am going to stick close to CODA and my friends so it doesn't do that. I know it's going to happen. So I can minimize this effect and get help. And surrender to the process. And surrender to the acceptance of who I am and of my weakness. And love myself enough to plan around that. And plan to not fall into that hole that you see coming up in the sidewalk. Plan to go around it. Plan to go to the other side of the street. And the fellowship in CODA that I've gotten after I actually came in, put my feet in all the way wet, instead of just coming around the boundaries and reading about it and intellectualizing about it, it has been worth everything, more than the it's taught me how to love, basically. The importance of getting a sponsor I did not see in my other program for years and years and years, and it was not successful in that program for years and years and years until I did get a sponsor. And getting the sponsor for me was hard because I was special. I was different. Those people over there. But I didn't even when I figured this out myself. And I failed so many times in the other program that when I came into this program, I said, I'm not going to mess around. Let me find somebody that knows what they're talking about and can lead me the way and let's get going. And that's made all the difference in the world. And that has allowed me to work those 12 steps toward the promised spiritual awakening. And for me, I was not able to get any clarification on my self-worth, on who I am, until I understood who I am in my Creator, higher power. And when I'm able to get into that strength and power, then I no longer have to rely upon my old habits of responding to stimuli. I'll put it just that simple. Poke it with a pen. Because it changes me. It gives me. Separation from ego so that I can make decisions not on ego, but truly empathize, like they say here, and see the other person and see them and accept them. And it's helped me be non-judgmental. I would judge people on who I was going to give my empathy. And the other person, people weren't worth it. And that's not honest truth for me. So it's helped me get over that. It's also helped me get over COVID. CODA has saved my life. It helped me get over a defeating relationship blow that we've all suffered, I'm sure. Well, maybe except for one. I've been married long. That's John over there. That absolutely destroyed me. That was the most devastating personal loss and betrayal that I had ever experienced in my life, and just absolutely pulled the rug out from underneath me. Some of the things that I believed in and thought were real, and it just clarified CODA. And just really let me get in and see how my trying to behave this other person, trying to control her behavior through my gratuitousness, my overwhelming gratuitousness, was not that was feeding my need of wanting to be loved and lack of self-love, self-acceptance. And I saw right then that my therapist helped me go down and make a list, asked me to make a list of my relationships since my marriage was over. And I made a list, and every single one of those people I've had a relationship, except for my sponsors, were needy people that I was helping out for ego purposes. And I thought, if I don't change this pattern right now, it's just going to happen again. And CODA's helping me recognize that, and it saved my life. And that's not a light thing to really say. I mean, you hear it, you watch it on TV, but it saved my life and improved my joy of living 100-fold. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I'm going up there because I've never spoken to anybody in my life, and I've never been behind such a thing, and I'm super nervous, but I'm going to do it. So here I am. This is me, and I can tell you, without CODA, I could not be here. I used to be this, well, you will hear. So, I read the whole thing, wrote the whole thing, and maybe I'll read, maybe I'll talk, I don't know, I'm really nervous. Well, I grew up in a family in Denmark, Copenhagen. I came to the United States in 2007. And my family at home in Denmark was extremely dysfunctional. I could not be seen or heard for who I was. I was never allowed to state any emotions, any needs, any wants. My father was cruel, not so that he would beat me up, but he was extremely cruel in his mouth. He would humiliate me. He would degrade me to the point where I think I would rather have been hit, because that I could have just gotten rid of, could have healed, but the wounds never healed. So my father was a very, very, very tough man to live around. He has a saying, if I wasn't doing what he liked, he would put me into an insane asylum and I could sit there and rot. And I believed it. So I was petrified my whole life. My mother, on the other hand, could be a very kind woman, but she was a scared, needy, undeveloped emotionally. And it became my job, my duty, to make my mom happy, to make my mom's life perfect, and I didn't know how. So I was utterly enmeshed with my mom emotionally, physically, and I hate to say sexually. And it destroyed me, I say, even more than my relationship to my dad. Because I did not know who I was. My mother saw herself as ugly, stupid, second class, And if she was ugly, stupid, and second class, then so was I. And I would never amount to anything. And I believed it. I believed that I would never amount to anything. And it was a terrible way to grow up. I totally lost my own voice, and that's why I've chosen to speak on the compliance patterns. Because I complied with everything, because my life depended upon it. I literally thought I would die if I didn't comply. So for most of my life, I would do whatever it took to not rock the boat. Whatever it took for no one to be mad at me, for no raised voices, never, God forbid, anybody should get sad for something I said. God forbid anybody should anything. I felt that it was my responsibility to fix everybody, to be there for everybody, but no one was ever going to fix my life. And I literally thought, since I was going to fix theirs, they were supposed to fix mine. And no one did, so I must be that second-class person that my mom and dad told me that I was. So I felt like a piece of kelp in the ocean, stuck at the bottom, couldn't go anywhere, and the waves were just taking me back and forth, and I was so utterly lost. I moved to Tucson 5 years ago, and felt very lonesome the first year here, and decided to go back into therapy, which I've been in and out over many years, and trying to heal my wounds, and it has helped somewhat. But as I'm with my therapist here in Tucson, she tells me about something called CODA, which I had never heard about. I never really heard about 12 steps programs. They're not as used in Europe as they are here. We have them, but less. And I always tell this story for newcomers on my Tuesday morning. I went to the meeting, and I hated it. I hated the meetings. I hated all the stupid people in it. I hated the stupid chip they gave me, and I threw it out of the window on my way home because I hated everybody. I thought it was... And I went back to her and I said, I'm never going to go to a meeting because these people are stupid. They talk about all these things you shouldn't talk about. And she said, could you go back? And since I am a people pleaser, I decided to go back. And so I went back, and it has been the best thing I've ever done. Started to listen to what people said, starting to hear their stories, learning that the world was not coming to an end if you actually dared to say who you were, if you actually dare feel, if you actually dare to speak about who you were. So after about, I would say, a couple of months, I decided that I would venture my story on Tuesday morning. And that was the first time. This is a good 3 years ago. And that was the first time I had ever said outside of therapy into one close friend that I had been sexually abused by my mother. And I sobbed, and I was embarrassed, and I'm still get red-faced when I talk about it, because I really thought that the world had stopped. I thought I would die. I thought I would have a car crash on the way home. Thought people would like me. Thought people would ever speak to me again. I was so ashamed by my story. And the opposite happened. Everybody in the room came to embrace me. Everybody in the room came over to hug me, to tell me I was brave. One woman said, whom I didn't even know, she's like, but if you're so scared of driving home, I'll take you home. And I felt so loved. I felt so... I'm almost crying because I belonged. And I think I belonged for the first time in my life, I really felt I could be there with warts and all, and I could just talk. So, shortly thereafter, I decided I'm going to become an American citizen because I like the folks over here. So I'm now a proud American citizen because of COVID. So appliance patterns, you can understand why I have them all. And where was I? Yeah, so when I first started reading the patterns, I remember reading this thing, and I thought, somebody's inside my head, because everything is me, everyone, whether it was compliance or avoidance or control or whatever, they were all me. And I felt, first I felt overwhelmed, because why the... didn't anybody tell me about this for all these years? Why did I have to go around feeling so stupid for all these years and not knowing how to actually deal with people? Not knowing that there was these ways. And I almost went into a small depression because I felt I had wasted so much of my life not knowing. Just knowing little things like no is a full sentence. I could never even say I don't know, because then people would know how stupid I really was. And I was so afraid of somebody finding out how filthy I was inside and how stupid I was inside. And in CODA, I'm learning that I have just misunderstood the world, and that there are so many others who have misunderstood the world. And I'm no longer alone, and I'm no longer an outcast, and it's okay not to not know everything. And it's okay to ask questions. I could never ask questions, because then people will also know I'm stupid. So the compliance patterns were the ones that really struck me the most, because what I have done in my life, which was so profoundly against my beliefs, is insane. I have put myself in very dangerous situations as a young woman. I married the first man who asked me if I wanted to marry him because I couldn't say no. And it's just endless what I have done because I could not just be me because I didn't know. I had no idea. I had no idea of needs or wants of anybody. And I keep saying it, CODA is the best thing since sliced bread. Because it gives me the tools. It gives me a family. It gives me a fellowship. It gives me a place where I belong. And I have a wonderful co-sponsor, and she and I, we work. I mean, we work. It is page after page of written stuff, and we discuss and we go into it, and I go religiously to meetings. I love it. I feel bad when I can't go to my meetings, because not only because I learn, but I just feel, I go into the rooms and I feel I belong. I feel I can be me, and I love it. I love it. I love it. And I love you guys, and I love you guys for listening, because that is part of my healing too. The fact that I can stand here and talk and not feel like a filthy little nobody like I used to be. She still comes around from time to time, but then I have a phone list of how many people I can call. And sometimes if I'm in a really bad mood, no one knows if I've called 20 in a row. The others don't know that I have also called them. So, it works for me. So, another thing that happened in CODA was that I found God. I had not had a God before, because what would God do with somebody like me? I wasn't even worthy of God. But now I'm worthy of God, and I speak to God every day. And God helps me tremendously. I say that I couldn't stand here and talk without Coda. I couldn't stand here and talk without God, because I would be too frightened. And I would feel, who do you think you are that you can talk to people? But God has told me that I am just another human being. I am no more, I am no less. I'm just me, warts and all. And I never thought I should find a God. I never thought I should come to America. I never thought I should find Cola. I never thought I should stand for this sorts of thing. So, this is all I have to say.
I'm recovering codependent. I have been in CODA for about almost 5 years. It'll be 5 years last month. And I'm really happy to see so many of you come out to a free workshop put on by the Inner Group. We hope to put on more workshops like this, and so I hope that you will continue to come and support us and hear our message and carry the message back to other people. How many people in the room, could I ask, have never been to a CODA meeting? Your first time. Okay, great. Well, welcome. Glad to have you. And you'll hear, if you go to a meeting, you'll hear, keep coming back. It works if you work it, and you're worth it. And right now, I'm going to ask, before I finish up with what to expect at a CODA meeting, do you have any questions of any of our panelists?
At what point in your recovery did you start to see big changes?
Right away. but after 6 months, you could really begin. I began to see changes in the pattern. I mean, it's not done overnight, but it just the acknowledgement of the fact that, I mean, we have to acknowledge things before it can be changed. And for me, it was immediately. I mean.
For me, I started to notice changes for me when I started actually doing the recovery work. So for me, it was when I started working the Green Workbook. That's when I really started to see change, and it wasn't usually until I was like two steps ahead that I really saw the progress in the steps behind. So like when I was on step four, I was like, so glad I had step one and two and three. So, and that for me.
Anybody else want to respond?
Bill. The changes were slower for me. I had to work them and understand them. An author by the name of Melody Beeney was very helpful and provided better an understanding, and drove that. And so I had to work the steps twice before I really got it, because the fourth step is the inventory step, where you look at your character defects on a real and honest basis. And the first time through, I was too... I was still too caught up in being egotistical from that previous program that I didn't really need to do a hard fourth step work in CODA, and that was wrong because I didn't get any of the benefits from it until I did the work. And I different character defections, different difficulties in turning those character defects over than it was substance, you know, just don't use it. But the emotional deep. And it's compulsively rooted, and that's what our preamble says. It's so deep that we don't know we're doing it. I think Carl shared it too, that it just happens. And the results are disastrously the same time and time again until, you know, the steps help you see it and get an understanding along with your sponsor. And then, so it took me a second look around for my answer.
Anybody else? Are there any other questions?
I was going to ask a question. Have you ever found yourself going into a relapse if you miss more than 1 week of meetings? If there's ever a time that you've had to miss, more than 1 week where you couldn't go to any meetings?
I can answer that. Okay. I found an avoidance pattern that when I started to go to meetings late, that was usually when I would notice that I was in avoidance with recovery altogether. Mm-hmm. So I usually paid attention if I wasn't showing up like 5 minutes ahead, kind of excited. So I figured that out because I would miss a meeting wanting to avoid recovery because, well, it was scary to get honest, you know? I'm a really good person with asshole moments. So it was really hard to like wrap my mind around. And so that's when I discovered, so when I start to find that I'm late to a meeting, I start to back it up then and figure out what I'm afraid of. And then one of the ways I push through that, if I'm not going to a meeting because I'm fearful in avoidance, I usually find somebody that's trustworthy and I share what I'm afraid of. And it has a way of dispelling that. And then I find myself going to meetings. And at times, there have been sometimes when I couldn't go to a meeting and I was fortunate enough to have a sponsor, she would say, well, let's have a phone meeting. And we would actually, like, and I was like, this feels kind of like really strange, but we would do the serenity prayer on the phone. We would have a phone meeting, literally. And she would share, I would share, and we would have a phone meeting. And so I discovered that that was super helpful to have a sponsor to do a phone meeting with. And so maybe in a co-sponsory way or with a contact list, you know. If I ever am without a sponsor, well, I'm without a sponsor at the moment, but if I ever had a need for that, that would be something I would try.
Can I help? Answer too?
Sure, absolutely.
I don't feel that I relapse if I'm out of CODA, like if I go away for a month and I don't go to a CODA meeting. I don't relapse in time. It's more whom I'm with. If it's my family of origin, I can relapse in 30 seconds.
Wow.
But today, when I relapse, I know I'm doing it, and I can take myself out of the situation. But the closer the person are to me, emotionally, family, that is, it takes no time, not the actual time in time.
Anybody else? Any other questions?
I have one other question. So do you know what your response would be when you're sharing with either a friend or a family member about going to CODA and then they say, oh, you don't need to go to CODA. You're in the wrong program. You're not codependent.
I had that with my husband. And it's just none of his business. He did not like me going to CODA at all. Are you going to go over and be those people? You know, those?
Yeah, really.
And I said, you know, I'm one of those. But he has seen the result that has happened, and our marriage is better than it's ever been. Because I'm no longer a little subservient nobody, and he's kind of like that. So it's hard, but I mean, it is ultimately the thing about CODA is for me, for all of us. I know we're not supposed to say us, but it is, we're not very good at looking after ourselves. So if somebody too much would have said to me, if he would have said to me, you can't go, I probably wouldn't have gone. Mm-hmm. But it is hard, but it is ultimate to find ourselves. And it is not up to other people whom we think where we belong. It's up to us to find out. I think sometimes when people say that, it's because they're scared themselves.
Yeah. I ran into a similar thing. My mother didn't want me to share any family secrets. That was not something, she's like, other people are going to talk, everybody's going to know, you know, you don't want to do this, this is a bad idea. And so I did run into that, and what I discovered was I discovered number 7 in the promises. I am capable of developing and maintaining healthy and loving relationships. The need to control and manipulate others will disappear as I learn to trust those who are trustworthy. And one of the things was I would go to family members and want their opinion on what I should be doing. And they have many beautiful qualities. Some of them do not, but some of them do have both qualities of wonderful and not wonderful, but they weren't trustworthy. So I was going to people who weren't trustworthy for, hey, tell me what you think about this. And so I don't go to my mom on some subjects or two of my sisters because I learned to trust those who are trustworthy. So I go to trustworthy people to ask a very important question, like, should I do this spiritual endeavor? So that code of promise, when I hear it over and over and over again, I started asking myself, is this person trustworthy with this question? So that helped me a lot, that promise with that. Should I be a coder or not? Are these people trustworthy for me to ask? You know?
Thanks, Joy. Bill?
Bill. I guess I look at it as the more you get into coding, the more you can see that all those people saying those things at you are the ones that really need it. Okay. Part of CODA is self-care and setting your boundaries with what you feel you need to care for yourself and not listening to the old tapes. I think the young kids are fortunate in that that metaphor works for them because they're used to listening and reprogramming. And Carl mentioned it in his talk, and I liked it because we have to reprogram ourselves, and that's what CODA is about, is working these steps to reprogram this compulsive, unconscious behavior, find out about it, and share it with a group of people that have the same thing, and then get rid of it.
So when you walk in the door, you can expect to be greeted warmly and in friendship with a welcome chip and information about CODA. Am I codependent? What do you do at a meeting? All kinds of things. If you're not greeted that way, shame on us. But you should be greeted that way. The first meeting can be a little uncomfortable, and you're probably wondering, and speaking to your question, you're probably wondering if you're in the right place or if this is the right meeting. We suggest that newcomers attend at least 6 meetings, and I might even go so far as to say 7 if you want to go around to each of the 7 meetings and see if you feel connected to the particular meeting that you're attending. Sometimes you will, sometimes you won't. The first time I went to a meeting, I didn't know anything that was going on. I'd never been to a 12-step meeting at all. And I think sometimes, too, if you pick a meeting that's close to your geographical location where you live, you're probably more likely to go back to that meeting unless you feel a real sense or a real draw to go to another meeting. It just seems like the closer you are to a meeting, the more apt you are to attend. A leader, usually someone who's been in CODA for a while, will follow a written format for the meeting. And that includes that it's not limited to opening with the Serenity Prayer and the welcome, the preamble, the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and then we close with the 12 promises. Members of the group read these out loud by introducing themselves by their first names only, and we may identify ourselves as codependent, recovering codependent, or grateful codependent. We have announcements honoring months or years of recovery, upcoming workshops or retreats, and other matters affecting the group. By group conscience, which means that all or a majority of the members of that group may make decisions at a monthly or quarterly business meeting, whichever the group has designated. Those decisions are meant to enhance the meeting, and they may call meetings as often as necessary. Most meetings last an hour. I think there are a couple of meetings. The Saturday meeting, I think, goes for an hour and 15 minutes. The Wednesday night meeting is scheduled for about an hour and a half. Sometimes it doesn't go that long if there aren't that many people attending. We have a reading from selected CODA literature. It could be from the Blue Book. It could be from the Green Workbook. Something that's related to CODA with an exception.
a group may, by group conscience, decide that they want to discuss non-CODA approved literature, but literature that is related to recovery. Each attendee is given 3 to 5 minutes to share about the reading or some topic that's on their mind or something that they want to bring up that they feel is related to their codependent behavior or their recovery. To support the purchase of CODA materials, we pass around what we call the seventh tradition basket, which is usually a dollar or whatever you feel that you can contribute to help us buy more literature and do more outreach programs so that we can try to get as many people who may need CODA, bring that to their attention, and we do a lot of that through literature and through these workshops. We close our meetings in a group circle with a serenity prayer, and when we do that, we usually hold hands, and we finish with keep coming back. It works if you work it, and you're worth it. And now Chris is going to work. Before we do the serenity prayer, we don't have to get into a big circle, but before we finish and close with the serenity prayer, Chris is going to read the 12 promises.
Hi, I'm Chris, codependent.
Hi, Chris.
12 Promises of Codependence Anonymous. I can expect a miraculous change in my life by working the program of Codependence Anonymous. As I make an honest effort to work the 12 steps and follow the 12 traditions. 1, I know a new sense of belonging, the feeling of emptiness and loneliness will disappear. 2, I am no longer controlled by my fears. I overcome my fears and act with courage, integrity, and dignity. 3, I know a new freedom. 4, I release myself from worry, guilt, and regret about my past and present. I am aware enough not to repeat it. 5, I know a new love and acceptance of myself and others. I feel genuinely lovable, loving, and loved. 6, I learn to see myself as equal to others. My new and renewed relationships are all with equal partners. 7, I am capable of developing and maintaining healthy and loving relationships. The need to control and manipulate others will disappear as I learn to trust those who are trustworthy. 8, I learn that it is possible to mend, to become more loving, intimate, and supportive. I have the choice of communicating with my family in a way which is safe for me and respectful of them. 9, I acknowledge that I am a unique and precious creation. 10, I no longer need to rely solely on others to provide my sense of worth. 11, I trust the guidance I receive from my higher power to come to believe in my own capabilities. And 12, I gradually experience serenity, strength, and spiritual growth in my daily life.
Thank you, Chris.